Welcome to the Hands-On Business Podcast, the place you come to get tips, tricks, and advice on growing your business. Now, as you know, I wanted to create a place where you can hear business leaders like yourself discussing systems and processes that they have used to help catapult their own growth in their business. Now, I focus on getting people onto the show who are actually doing it, not just talking about doing it, so you can get real actionable takeaways which you can then implement into your own business. Today, obviously, is going to be no different, and I was delighted to invite Rich Levine onto my show. Rich has an MSc in Leadership and Change, and he's also the author of the book, You're Doing It Wrong, Stop Managing and Start Leading. We get into the differences between management and leadership, why is that important, what are the key steps to becoming a good leader, and why that is critical to your success. So sit back, get yourself a drink, and let Rich tell you what you need to do to become a great leader that followers can trust, which then leads to business growth and success. Enjoy the episode. Delighted to be joined today by Richard Levine, author of the book, You're Doing It Wrong, Stop Managing and Start Leading. Now, Rich has an MSc in Leadership and Change, and he believes that many companies don't reach their full potential because they're hiring managers and not leaders. So today, what we want to do is to delve into leadership and see if we can start to understand why leadership is so important and how can we all become better leaders. So a very big welcome, Richard, and thanks, thanks for joining us on our Hands-On Business Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. So really looking forward to today. And so what I always try to start to do is start at the beginning in terms of how do you come to be sitting here today and having that mission of training managers how to lead?
I'm going to start with what I call my Hollywood hero story. And I was not the hero in the beginning. Heroes don't come until the end of the story. I was the manager that the C-suite loved. I could hit all my sales goals. I could manage the budget. I could manage the spreadsheet. I could fix the production line. I could fix a process. And they were happy. I was making a lot of money, getting a lot of bonuses, but my team was not happy. And that was the crutch for me that said, wait a second, it's not all about money. It's not about processes. It's not about procedures or products. It's really about people. So I set out on a personal journey, and thank goodness for smartphone technology. It was listening in the background and I'm scrolling through my social media feed and an ad pops up on my phone for a leadership and science course at St. Edward's University. I clicked on that as fast as I possibly could. I applied online that day and I thought that I was going to be rejected being an you know, in the profession for a long time, I figured they were looking for young hustlers. Lo and behold, to go through the interview process, they select me. I get my leadership degree. And that's when I had the aha moment because I was looking for something. What was I missing? I knew it was leadership, but I didn't understand the difference between being a manager and being a leader. And then once I went through that program, worked on my thesis, which was all wrapped around those concepts, the picture started becoming crystal clear. And I also knew as a youngster growing up, I played a lot of sports. I thought I wanted to be a coach. Well, my dream has come true. I'm now a coach. I'm just not coaching what I thought I would be. You know, I'm coaching managers to become leaders versus athletes to become superstars.
Cool thing just to pick out there, because it's really interesting, because you were saying that you were the manager that the C-suite loved, you were hitting all your targets. So just talk to me a bit about that, because most people will be thinking, right, hang on, I'm hitting all my targets. The leadership team or the C-suite team, because we can discuss whether they're leaders actually, but anyway, the C-suite team are delighted with what you're doing. But you said one thing that really resonated. You said that I was hitting everything, but my team weren't happy. So just talk to me a bit about that, because actually some people in those positions would be thinking, doesn't matter. They might not be happy, but they're doing what I need them to do to hit all my figures. So let's carry on. So what was it that made you have that feeling that you need to do something different?
It was the people connection and learning and starting to understand that those lives, those people that were working for me, were there because they were doing same thing I was trying to do, put a roof over their head, have a bed to sleep in and food on the table. But I also had a mentor tell me that if you help enough other people get what they want, they in return will help you get what you want. I was getting what I wanted, but I wasn't doing it in a manner that was prudent to them. I was telling them, I was falling subject to some of my own, what I call my leadership pitfalls. I was caring more about my product. I was caring more about the process, the procedures, the profits, than I was about the people. And I had to flip the script, if you will, and start caring about the people, because people don't know how much you care until you show them how much you care about them. And then once you make it about them, now they're willing to help you get what you want. And that took a long time. It was a hard lesson for me to learn. And it was having, and it started out by having an open door policy and me learning how to be a leader on the fly. And I started opening my door and I would tell people in a meeting, I'd tell my team, I had a division. I had about 8 managers reporting to me. And I finally told them, I said, look, I need you to give me feedback. If you don't tell me what I am doing that you do not like or approve, I'm going to keep doing it because you haven't put up any resistance to me. So if I have a habit that you don't like, if I say something you don't like and actually you don't agree with, you've got to come tell me. And that also took some discipline on my side, because now I'm asking for feedback. I'm opening myself up and becoming vulnerable. And what happens when we get feedback is usually our brain goes into fight or flight mode. Somebody's attacking me. They're telling me that I'm doing something wrong. And then you go into self-defense mode, which gets ugly in a whole nother way. But I had to be vulnerable enough and composed and disciplined enough to say, okay, I asked for this feedback. They're giving me what I asked for. Now it's my job to take it and go figure out how to fix it. And sometimes it was simple as saying, okay, I don't understand what you're saying. The next time I do it, can you stop me dead in my tracks and say, you just did it? Now I've got context. I have the example. Everything's going around. Because it's a lot of times it's hard and a lot to ask your followers or your employees to tell you as the leader what's doing wrong. In so many organizations, I too was one of those. I was put into a leadership position of authority. Hey, you've got the title. I mean, I had title of vice president for a while. I have title general manager. I had a different manager titles every time I had an authoritarian title. But just because I was a manager and has given authority does not make me be a leader.
And I get into that, because that's a really interesting thing. There's a couple of questions I wanted to pick out of that. Firstly, how did you know that they weren't happy if you were hitting your target? So was that, how was that manifesting itself? Just as a few tips to, so people can get an idea of how they can identify these things.
It all started with having conversations with everybody and starting to have one-on-one meetings with them. And those one-on-one meetings in the beginning were brutal, but I set them up and said, we're going to have one-on-one meetings. And it got to the point where I had to keep studying how to do a one-on-one. And at the beginning, I thought it was as simple as me asking them for feedback. Hey, how's it going? What's going on? Give me all the information. I found out it takes more than that. Hey, how's your family? What'd you do this weekend? Is there anything you want to share? I don't know all your hobbies. What are your hobbies? And then all of a sudden, as soon as I started showing them I cared about them, we started having conversations about them and their families. And then I was able to start picking up on things, on what made them tick, what made them happy. And I realized that me pushing them to sell an extra 100, whatever it was we were selling, wasn't what was motivating them. It was their families. It was their hobbies. It was what they wanted to do outside. So as soon as I got to that point and said, all right, and here's the thing with one-on-ones. You've got to have a one-on-one. If you set it on the calendar, pick your cadence. Is it once a week? Is it twice a month? Is it 3 times? Whatever. But never miss a meeting. If you cancel a meeting with your employee, what's that tell them? In my book, it says, hey, I'm too busy for you. And if they cancel back, it's like, whoa, wait a second, something's going on. I better go have a conversation with them. So it instantly builds trust, because now we've got the standing meeting and you start having some accountability that goes back and forth. So inadvertently, I created accountability with my team because they knew we were going to have conversations. But instead about being how many, you know, where are we at on the budget? Where's the new process? What's this new product? It was about them. And then that came second. And we were able to take our sales team from being one of the best in the region to being one of the best in the country. And what happened was, is we started having all employee meetings and getting everybody to buy in. We started doing weekly meetings. I called them the weekly coffee talk. It was no longer than 20 minutes. I had somebody from a different department help me run the meeting every week. So we got people to participate and we told everybody, you know, here's what you guys have said you needed. Here's how we're going to give it to you. Here's the tools we've given you to help you with your, you know, whatever it is you're doing. And then we come back and say, okay, now here's where we're at. Here's where I'm at from a corporate standpoint on where we need to get the numbers. And we had a plan and we laid that plan out and we kept covering it and covering it, but it was just having that common goal and all of us working on it together. We were collaborating, not cooperating. So I think longest story ever for you, but I think the story is it's cooperation and collaboration. We were collaborating. Cooperation, the dominant person wins. The person with authority wins. Hey, I need you to do this. You cooperate by doing it. If we're going to collaborate, now it's a whole different game. I'm open to letting you give me your feedback and opinions on how we can do things better.
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, I often use the term, and I've heard it used, that, you know, I'm very agnostic in terms of where the ideas come from, where the progress comes from. We just want to work together to progress. And I think that's what you're saying in terms of that collaboration versus cooperation, rather than me almost planting the seed that this is what I want to do. So I want to convince you to actually support what I want to do, as opposed to no, well, this is where we're trying to get to as a team. We've agreed. How do we do it as a team? And it's really interesting what you said, because it sounds simple, because what you're talking about is about simply developing a relationship with somebody, developing a relationship with your team, and then speaking to them as human beings that you're interested in. Because if you're interested in what they're interested in, they, amazingly, they're interested in what you're interested in, and then you can work together. But it seems simple, which is what we're going to talk about, there's not that many people that actually do it effectively, which is...
I was one of them. I was just as guilty. If you would, let me give you another example.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take this example. You said you wanted to help your listeners understand the difference. I'm going to take this example from a recent podcast. So I've been listening to your podcast every morning. I get up, I go out and I run. I've been listening to your podcast along with a couple others. And I believe you had a gentleman on the show by the name of Dr. John Oda.
Correct.
I believe, yes. Not too long ago. Well, let's talk about Dr. John's podcast from a different perspective. Let's talk about it from my perspective, the old way versus the new way. So the old way I would have taken Dr. John's advice was, hey, I just listened to this awesome podcast and here are 9 things that we're not doing well that we're going to do. So let's go get going on this right now. Okay. It's nice. Sounds great. I'm polite, right? So there's the difference. I'm being polite. But now let's go to the other side and get to the personal side and be empathetic. I would go, hey, I just listened to this podcast and this guy was really cool and he had some great ideas and he mentioned 9 things that he thinks a lot of organizations are doing wrong. I'm curious if you'd be willing to listen to this podcast and help me validate if this guy's on target with where we're at and what we're thinking. Can you do that with me? Now it's a completely different conversation. One, I said, cooperate, go listen to it. The other one I said, collaborate, help me understand. And that, it took me a long time to learn how to do that. Sounds simple. I've been practicing it for years now, so I'm pretty good at it. But when I work with new managers, it's so easy for your brain to fall back into a rut. And that's where the critical thinking skills come in. And our brain is conditioned that when somebody says a statement to us, I'm probably doing it right now. You're probably doing it right now. We're coming up with answers to what we think you're going to ask next or the situation you're in based on prior experience. Now to get out of that rut is the trouble. How do you force yourself to come up with a new question, a new answer to a problem that you've had before? And we all know that doing the same thing over and over again is the definition of insanity, right? We do it over and over. We expect the same result or different results from doing the same thing. And it's insanity. So we've got to, so with the critical thinking part, I think is key, is you've got to figure out how to get your mind away from responding all the time or answering somebody's question. You got to take that second. You got to pause and reflect and think, okay. And when somebody shares an idea with you, how is their idea different from what you came up with in your mind? And ask them to say, one of the most powerful things I've found is just simply to say to somebody, tell me more.
Yep. That's so one of the most powerful tools are the simplest words. So in terms of you're just giving that example of a different way of approaching that podcast to John Otter podcast. So that's about empowerment really, isn't it? It's about, because you're empowering them to actually challenge you and actually support what you're trying to achieve with the team, rather than, well, this, as we said before, this is what I think we should do. Now you just go and validate what I just told you to go and do. Because it's like, well, they can't really come back and say, no, I don't agree with you. But the way you phrased the question in terms of, you know, tell me more, or I'm interested in your thoughts, or, you know, you go and have a look and see whether that is, you know, whether my thinking is right, I think is a real powerful way of getting people to actually trust you and actually know that you trust them, which I think is probably just as, if not more important.
You hit my favorite subject right there, and that's trust. And you've got to build trust. And for me, trust is, it's reciprocal, but in order to get it, you have to give it. And so that's where this critical thinking comes in, and being compassionate, empathetic, whatever soft skill words you want to use, is you got to start connecting with those people. And I'll go back to my story earlier. We talked about when I started asking for feedback from my team. It didn't take hours and it didn't take days. It took more like weeks and months for them to even begin to trust me, to give me what they were thinking, because they were used to me coming back and saying, no, that's not going to work. No, that's not the procedures. No, that's not in the manual. No to all the rules. And I had to retrain the way I think. I grew up, part of my personal history is I grew up in a small town in rural Iowa in the US, and very, very conservative, private schools. I was told no an awful lot. No, you can't do this. No, you can't do that. It's all these rules, rules, rules. And that got me so used to, when I got out into being a manager, not a leader, a manager, that if it wasn't in the standard operating procedure, the guidebook, the answer was always no. Mm. But other people had different experiences to that. And that's when I had to open up and go, wait a second, just because I'm quote unquote in charge or an authority here, doesn't mean I get to run my free rein all over them. So the people piece, I'm going to keep going back to that. People first.
Yeah, no, could you distill, because I think now the nice example that you gave with the podcast, but you can distill a couple of differences between managers and leaders. Because I can hear some people thinking, yeah, but he was really successful as a manager. So why did he go through all this hard work to become a leader when he was doing so well anyway?
A couple of things. I think management is only going to work in the short term. It's not a long-term solution. And then when you start thinking about management, you're managing things, inventory, products, procedures. Leadership is about people, and you're leading people. You can't lead things because they aren't going to follow. You can drag them around behind you in your wagon or your car or your semi or your train, whatever. But for people to follow you, you've got to give them, you've got to motivate them, you've got to inspire them, you've got to engage them, and you got to keep them going day after day. And the biggest thing is, well, trust is a big thing in my book, but so is hope. You got to give these people a reason to get out of bed every day and come to work and fight for you. I mean, if you don't give these people hope, I mean, let's be honest. Does anybody want to be hopeless? I mean, you don't want to run your social media feed and say, I'm hopeless. I'm on my way to work today. I got a bad boss. Nobody wants that.
That distills it quite nicely in terms of leadership around people, management around things. And I think that's hope. And that is a really important thing, because there's going to be times when things aren't going well. Because I think people think, oh, well, you're a great leader, so everything's always going well. But it's when things aren't going well that good leaders come to the fore, because people buy into your leadership and buy into the collective. and actually will keep going through those difficult times. Whereas if you're just a manager, that's when you start losing people. People start thinking, I've had enough of this. Oh, and that person over there will pay me more money, so I'm going there. So I think that's a real important distinction. Okay.
So you know, another piece too is with management. So if we go back and we look at what business owners, managers, or whatever want, a lot of them want the same thing. They want more production. They want higher profits. They want better processes. And what they usually do, for the most part, my experience has been, is they go after those and they try to fix all those things. Okay, we need higher production. So then they come up with something like Six Sigma or, and I'm not sure what that is, but I just know it exists. There's also KPIs. Okay, so we're going to measure all these things. If it's not quantifiable, managers don't want to do it. They've got to have a way to measure it. And there's so much more to it. And what I've learned is that if you go out and you get help people get what they want, productivity goes up, profits go up, processes improve. How does a process improve anyway? If you allow people to give their input and they're the ones doing the process and say, hey, you got a great idea, Rich, you know, this process like this, but I think we could do it better like this. If I close that down, they're never going to improve. And then they're never going to give me feedback. So I got to keep that feedback loop open. And if they have a hand in creating it or fixing it, they're going to be more likely to be engaged in keeping it going in the future.
Without doubt, I think. And I think that also motivates the other people within the team because they see that actually this guy, this girl, this person is really engaged. And actually he or she listens to their ideas. And therefore you feel as another team member that I can now start putting my ideas for. And then you start getting almost like an idea generating unit. Because everyone's coming up with ideas thinking, actually, this is a great, I think this is better. And I think that, I think it's galvanizing that team environment and actually making sure, and I think I come back to that word empowerment, where people feel empowered to actually challenge you, but also to come up with their own ideas, knowing that it's a safe environment, that you're not just going to shove it down and you're going to actually have a discussion about that idea and you always get to a better idea. I mean, I think I can't remember who said it actually. I think Sergeant Newton, who said, if I've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants, as opposed to, well, no, I've got an idea and we just want everyone to follow my idea. You know, you bring an idea to the fore and you tend to end up with the best idea rather than just your idea, which I think is really, really important. And one thing you said earlier is, and I know that you've spent a lot of time doing an MSc, which is all about learning and practicing. And in the book, you know, you're doing it wrong. It says it takes time and practice to become proficient at anything, which is true. And leadership, like any other skill or trade, must be practiced on a daily basis, repeatedly. So we know how you've done it. You know, you've gone into, you know, done an MSc and now you've got a business based around it. So you're always practicing. So if I'm sitting here and I'm in that, let's say I'm between management and leadership, but I really want to take that next step and be a brilliant leader. What are the key things I can practice and how would I go about them?
So first of all, I think you've got to remember that you don't know everything. There's so much information in this world right now that you can't know it all. Even if you're an expert, you still can't know it all. So always be willing to learn. And that's kind of the baseline for how I believe is, number one, you've got to be willing to learn. And then once you start learning, you can start growing. Once you begin growing, you can start leading. Now here's what's going to happen. If you just read a book, let's say you read several books, I listen to your podcast, I listen to other podcasts. What happens to that information if I never do anything with it? Falls dead, right? Okay, so you've got to go out and you've got to do something. You've got to act. Guess what? We're all human. We're going to make mistakes. Lord knows I've made a million mistakes. And he knows I'm going to make a lot more going forward. I know I'm going to make more going forward, but I'm willing to understand that I'm going to learn from those mistakes. So I'm going to read and learn, go out, I'm going to do it. I'm going to practice it. And then I'm going to make mistakes. And then I'm back into learning and growing again. And as that cycle continues, eventually I'm going to be able to go where, you know what, I'm pretty confident with my leadership skills. I think I've made it to the next step, but it's this constant cycle of always in being willing to learn. reading. I read 3 books a month minimum. Plus I listen to podcasts.
I think as you said, in any sphere, if you want to get better at it, you have to put a work in, don't you? You know, it doesn't just come by osmosis that you sit down there and be like, all right, I think I'm going to be a great leader now. And if you get to be a great leader, there's always, as you just said, the next level to keep going and learning and improving. And just on that, because I was thinking about it, because sometimes you see people, because what you're saying is, in reality, the only way you can then see whether a person is a good leader or a great leader, or the only way that someone can define themselves as being moving along that spectrum, is by looking at how they interact with people on almost like a daily or a regular basis. But people often make the mistake just that they see somebody giving a presentation on stage and people are enraptured and they think, oh, what a great leader. So I just thought it's worth, if you could say a few words about how would you then, you know, distinguish between, oh yeah, he's good on stage versus he's a good leader.
Yeah, being on stage is a lot about action. And I wrote a little bit about this in my book. And if you're watching, you know, shows on TV, watching a sporting event, you'll hear a commentator say, oh, that person's a great leader, or that coach is a great leader. But I always stop and ask myself, okay, they're a great leader. What did they do? What did they say? How are they helping people do better? If I'm standing on a stage speaking and nobody's listening to me, then I'm not really being a leader. And somebody might say, oh, that's great. But you got to figure out a way to engage them. So when you're a leader, you got to be able to walk the talk, and then you got to be able to follow through with it. And then I think this is what, when you and I were kind of prepping for this, going back and forth in emails, as I said, you got to be extremely consistent, and it takes a lot of hard work. You can't stop, because once you start delivering and you start inspiring people and you're giving them hope, if you stop doing that, they fall flat. And you don't want them to fall flat. You want them to continue doing your process, selling your products, helping you make money. So you got to continue working at this. So one person on the stage for me is an event, and that is not enough to instill change. And leadership is all about instilling change. I can change my clothes. That's an event. But if I change as a person, probably not. But now if I go and I do that speech you're talking about, or whoever does that speech, and then let's say I'm in the audience and I follow up with them and say, Hakeem, that was a great speech. Would you be willing to help me? A leader's going to say yes. And they're going to figure out a way to help. That might be a monetary cost with that, but you're going to help me. Somebody that's not a leader wouldn't offer to help you and probably say, you know, here's my book, I'm really busy. They'd come up with some type of excuse. And I think that right there is a subtle hint on leaders are always willing and open to at least listen before judging and saying, no, I don't have time.
Thank you. That's really clear. And just in terms of some of the practicalities of that leadership piece, because I'm always trying to think of, right, well, so what are my listeners thinking? So one of the things we talked about before this, and also during it, and it's in your book about the annual review and the way that managers would do it. So I suppose my question is, does a leader still use performance reviews? Do they do it in a different way? What's the way that you'd be able to, you know, move from that? Well, I've just got a performance review and I'm going to go through it. As you say in the book, you tick your boxes, you score them out of 5, you then say, well, that's the grading, here's your pay rise, and everyone goes away allegedly happy, which they never are. You know, what's the way that a leader would approach that differently?
So if we go back to what we were talking about earlier, managers check boxes, right? They manage things. So as a manager, if I got a performance review, to me, I'm looking at it as, here's another task I've got to get done. I've got to sit down with my employee, Hakeem, guess what? Here's your review. I think you do really well at this. I don't think you do great at this. But now we also talked about doing one-on-ones. If you and I are having one-on-ones and we're actually engaged in those and we're having a conversation, and I can say, hey, Hakeem, you look a little off today or this week, what's going on? And you tell me that maybe you had a bad weekend or a bad week, or you got some things going on in your life, and I become compassionate and empathetic with you. And now I understand that that is hindering your productivity at work. But now I get to work with you on an emotional side. Hey, how can I help you through that? What do you need from me to help you get, you know, beyond this? And obviously there's limitations to what an employer can do, but now at least I'm being compassionate. I got an understanding. And I know that me yelling at you, telling you you're not doing enough, isn't going to motivate you, right? Actually, it's probably going to drive that stake in the ground a little farther with you going, you know what? I don't want to work for you. You're a jerk and I'm out of here. So having those weekly or one-on-one, regular routine one-on-one conversations and making them about deploy. Because when you get to that annual review thing, here's what everybody expects in an annual review. And you just touched on it. You expect a raise and you expect a good performance. Why? Because no one's told you, if you're a manager, most likely you haven't been doing these one-on-ones and you haven't told somebody what they're doing poorly, if you think that. But I'm also a big believer in leading from strengths. Hakeem, what are you good at? What do you bring to this team? And then taking those strengths and getting you out of what you might not be as good at and getting you into something where you excel. It doesn't mean I have to change your title or your role. I mean, your position. I just might have to change what you're doing every day. Now, if I start hitting what makes Hakeem tick, Hakeem's going to help the rest of the team start ticking. The rest of the team's going to go, holy cow, we got somebody in here that cares about us. Then when the annual review comes in, it's not a scary situation for me as the manager. Now I'm a leader and you as the employee, and we get to collaborate. We get to have fun. We get to talk about it. You know what? And if we've been honest and sincere with each other and we know exactly where we're at, if the business is doing really well, yeah, I should be able to give you some money. Cause guess what? You helped me get to where I want. Now, if the business isn't doing really well and you and I have been having that conversation, say, you know what? I've come from the automotive industry. This pandemic has really had, you know, it's put a strain on the inventory. And you know what? Things just aren't where they used to be. So we're gonna have to sit tight for a little bit, but what can we do to work through this? Now we're collaborating again.
Yeah. So it's effectively, it's about catching people doing things right. That's what you're talking about, the strength, as opposed to trying to find fault in people, which is obvious, often what people do to praise. Oh, well, yeah, you're good at that. I'll brush over that. But you've got this wrong, that wrong, this wrong, that wrong. And then they wonder why then the appraisal or the performance appraisal is a difficult conversation, because people also know it and are apprehensive of it. And actually, some of the best ones I've been through, and I've tried to model this behavior, is when people actually, as you just said, well, that's me, right? You know what the values are in this organization? You know what you tell me, you give me examples of what you've done to live these values, or because then you're again empowering me to say, actually, I'm going to blow my trumpet because I know I've done all these great things. So you go into that meeting quite positive because you've had a conversation, as you said, because you do it on a regular basis as well. So there's no surprises because you've been talking all the way through the year. So if there is an issue or is it an area that needs to be improved, you've already probably dealt with it. So it's not all stored up to the end of the year where it's like, ta-da, you're terrible, all these things. Oh, well, you're waiting for 12 months to tell me. Okay. I think I might move on.
You said something really important too in there about how, you know, people point out you did this wrong, you did this wrong. Let's go back to the difference between management and leaders. You could do 9 things right. The manager is going to point out the one thing you did wrong. A leader will point out everything you did well.
Yep.
And ask you how you can help you with that one thing you didn't do so well. That right there, I think, is the key difference. And the other piece too, that you just touched on as well, Hakeem, is with, you know, these annual reviews, if you're never having good quality conversations throughout the year, even if you only have 1 or 2, when that annual review comes down and you've got to write it out, recent memory is what sticks in your head. So that's how you're going to write your annual review. So what have you done well for me in the last 3 or 4 weeks? Cause that's what I'm gonna write down. Or maybe you've only made one mistake all year long and you just made it. Guess what's going on in your annual review? If you and I haven't had conversations all year long, that one big mistake, now you're being judged by one mistake that isn't fair to you. I mean, that's demoralizing. It's crippling. It's devastating.
Yeah, no,
it's not inspiring.
It is. And I've seen it. So often, which is very sad, but it means that people need the services to your offering, because there's lots of people who are really struggling And I think one of the interesting things is, and this is what I found, certainly when you become a manager of people, if you go from one day where you are generally doing the job and you know a few things, then you go to the next day where you're now a manager and everyone expects you to be this great leader. And it's asking you all sorts of questions. It's like, all right, well, what training have you had? What support have you had? What, you know, how is it? It's almost like, no, I'll give you the title of the manager. You now need to be a great leader. And if you're not a great leader, then there's something wrong with you, as opposed to where's the support mechanism? Where's the modeling, the help, and all those sorts of things that, you know, if you're talking about learning and training and development, that can actually help you be a better leader.
Yeah, the whole production, I call it the Peter principle, and I'm sure I didn't name it that, somebody else did. But you have somebody that's really good at sales or really good at production, and then all of a sudden they say, hey, you're our top performer. You're going to be the new leader of the team. They might not even want to be the leader. I mean, so where have these, just because it's quantifiable is why somebody wants to say, hey, you got the highest numbers, we're going to put you in charge. Here's what I look for when I was going through, and I still haven't perfected it scientifically yet, because I'm big in the science side, but I would go and I'd hire people for production. And I would watch the ones that would come out of the gate super fast, just killing it. And then 2, 3, 4 months into it would start falling off because I knew they were no longer being challenged. It was obvious that they could still perform, but what was missing from it? So I'd still go and start having conversations. Hey, we're building widgets and you used to build 50 widgets a day. Now your production's down to 25. What's going on? Oh, you know, I'm just not challenged. You know, find out what it is, what motivates them. And those people I've found, believe it or not, are usually the ones that are looking for that next challenge. Now, does that mean they're going to make a great leader? No, but they might be willing to learn about the skills that it takes to go and do it, because they want to be, once they've mastered something, and let's be honest with you, if, you know, if we're working in production, working on an assembly line, doing the same thing over and over all day for years, it's pretty monotonous, pretty boring. Now, some people are made to do that and they don't want to be messed with, but your highest performers do not necessarily make your best leaders.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really important. And I think the best companies understand that, and they look for traits as opposed to, as you just identified, and in sales, it's just so common. You're the top performer, you're going to be a manager. And actually a lot of the time they crash and burn because actually, no, when you have that conversation, well, I like being a salesperson, but I thought that my career would be hindered if I didn't accept the management job. And you're thinking, well, no, let's find out what it is that you really love and we can develop you through that route rather than sticking you into some area where you're not interested. And actually you frankly don't have the competency in terms of, it's not even the competency, not most of the time, it's just you don't want to will. You just don't want to do it. So you're not prepared to gain the competency to actually do that job. Cause it's like, why would I be working hard and learning and watching podcasts and listening to, you know, reading stuff when I'm not really interested. I love sales. So why didn't you just leave me doing that and just progress me through that career? So I think that's an interesting one. So we're talking about the traits of successful leaders, and I know you've definitely got tips. You know, what would you say are the three key areas or the three key tips that you need to be a successful leader or to get to successful leadership?
Three keys. I think number one is you've got to be able to build trust. And if you can't build trust with your team, you're not going to get very far, because trust helps create a safe environment. And you touched on that earlier, having that safety. It's them being able to come back to you and give you information and tell you what's going on in the workplace. And if you don't build up that trust, you're never going to get that. And I kind of simulate, you know, that building of trust to the human anatomy. You got the brain, right? The brain is the CEO of your body.
Yeah.
If you go out and you touch something, let's just keep it easy. You touch the stove and the stove's hot, but your fingers and your nerves never tell your brain it's hot. What's going to happen? You're going to touch it again. Eventually you're going to burn your hand off. Your hand's not going to want to stick around with you. I mean, so the anatomy, you can take that and you can put it into leadership, right? So if you're the CEO or you're the leader of your team, you're the brain. But if you don't have the bones to set up the structure, if you don't have the heart to keep the, you know, keep lifelines going, you don't have nerves to give you that feedback, your organization's going to die. You cannot live, a brain by itself just isn't enough to be sustainable. So you got to build up that trust. And I kind of mentioned this earlier, and it's like a bank account. So trust takes deposits, right? You've got to deposit trust in somebody else before you can withdraw and get back from them. Now, here's the crazy part about trust, in my opinion. It takes a ton of deposits to build up trust with somebody, because one little mistake, somebody can pull all their deposits with you back and take it back to them, and you have no idea how much that's going to be. They don't come out and say, guess what? I'm going to take everything. They just might take it and run, and then you're left high and dry. So this building of trust is critical in my book. And I was one of those guys. I went through a presentation, all employee survey, and my business unit came back and said, Rich, your organization lacks trust. I'm like, what are you talking about? But we were a production industry. Guess what we did with the inventory every day? We locked it up. That tells me I don't trust anybody. The organization said, Rich, you got to lock up all the inventory. But yet I didn't have a trusting environment. It's like, wait a second. All the actions we are doing is signifying that we don't trust anybody. Now you got to look at it and figure out a way to get around. It's like, how can we make this a trust environment? So there's some things that hierarchical structures do that destroy trust from the beginning.
Yeah.
So that's a whole big topic. Number two, empathy, empathetic. And I touched on this earlier. You've got to show them how much you care. No one knows how much you care until you show them how much you care about them. Leadership is not about you. Leadership is about them. And to be more empathetic, I believe you got to be an active listener. And I kind of talked about this before. Tell me more. And active listening means you're going to engage and you're going to be open to other people's perspectives and ideas and thoughts and feelings without you jumping to judgment. And that means that you're going to have to be authentic as well. And nobody likes a copycat artist, right? So I've got to go out. I've read a ton of books. I've picked up a lot of great ideas from other books. But what I do is I write those things down and I figure out, okay, how does this work for me? Not how did it work for so-and-so? And then I go out and I start using that. And then I think the last piece is probably ego. You got to be humble. You got to understand that you don't know everything. There's way too much information in this world. And I read in a book somewhere not too long ago that the author said that there's more information available right now for a toddler that's 6 years old than there was for an adult in the 14th and 15th century, probably even into the 16th century. Because there just weren't that many books then. You could read all the books in a lifetime back then. Yeah. It was expensive, but if you could get your hands on them, you could read. There's so much information and data in the world right now, you can't get it all on. And then the other part of that thing is we all have an ego, right? And egos help us reach unprecedented heights and it makes us competitive. But if you let the ego control, it's going to make you think that you're better than everybody else. And remember, leadership is about people. And if you're going to be a leader, you can't be better than everybody else. There has to be somebody out there that is as good as you or better than you. And I believe that putting those people on your team is part of the key. I want to hire the smartest, the brightest, the best, because they're not a threat to my existence. They're survival for me. They're going to tell me things I never knew before and go, wow, we're going to go somewhere. And then the last piece on the ego side is ego destroys culture. When you have a big ego, it's going to be difficult to make the appropriate decisions because your ego is now taking over. You can't think rationally anymore. And that also, ego also gives you the tendency to be impolite, selfish, interrupt others. You know, when I said active listening, you got to be quiet to actively listen. And then we believe we have the ability to make ourselves successful in the first place. So we've got to have some confidence. And I think there's a fine line between being confident and being egotistical.
And that's nice. And so trust, empathy, put ego aside. And then I've just written down here and wrapped it all around it, authenticity, because it's interesting because you will find some examples of people, they know that that's what you should do. So they fake it. So they try to be empathetic. They pretend they haven't got an ego, but, and I think you put this in the book in terms of actions versus words, you know, you can fake it for a certain amount of time, but people will see the real you come out at some point. And you can't keep fake. If you've got an ego and it overpowers you, it will come out on a regular basis, as opposed to saying, oh yes, well, I'm very humble and I'm really interested in what you've got to say, but let's do it my way.
Yeah. The old saying, fake it till you make it.
Yes.
I think is terrible advice. And part of what we have to do as leaders is you can't fake it. Like you just said, you can't make it forever. At some point in time, you've got to go ask somebody for help. There's nothing wrong with going out and finding somebody. And here I am, a leadership expert. I can't even count them. I probably have 7 or 8 mentors that I use on a regular basis. So here's my one advice I'd give people. Go out and create what I call the personal board of directors. Don't tell these people they're on your board of directors, but go build friendships with them and start having one-on-one coffee meetings with them or Zoom calls, what have you. Just start reaching out and engaging with them and start learning from them, asking them different things. Tell them you got a problem. Hey, I'm working on building a new business plan. I'd love to get your ideas. Would you be willing to share me? So now if you have 6 or 8 of those, you're going to get probably 12 different opinions because they're all going to have different ideas. But then you start taking all that back and you start laying it all out. And you got all these different people. Now here's the other key I do. So I'll just flat out tell everybody I'm 50 years old. So I'm smack dab in the middle of the century. I have people on my board of directors that are younger than me. And I mean significantly younger than me. I got some millennials that are in their late 20s, early 30s that I rely on heavily. Why? Because they're the future. They are what's coming forward. So I go and ask them, hey, I just talked to my old professor from university who's, you know, he's a baby boomer. You're a millennial. I need to hear your side of it. Now you've got two contrasting opinions and you can try to find something that's going to work for you versus just having one mentor. And if you only have one mentor, you're only going to get one opinion. So go build that personal board of directors.
Yeah, no, and I think that I always, not always, but I often relate things to sports. And you know, you're into your sports as well. And when I look at top professional sports people, they don't sit there saying, well, I'm at the top of my game. I know everything. So I'm not going to have a coach. I'm not going to have a mentor. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. The top ones are always improving. That's why they become the greatest of all time, because they're constantly getting better, even when people are coming through. And I think what you just said there about the humility, you have to be humble if you're going to ask people who, you know, have just come into the business or have come into the business and are a lot younger than you, because a lot of people think, oh, no, hang on, I'm 50. How can that young whippersnapper give me any advice, which means that you're not really looking to improve or get better? Because I always say to you, and I've seen it work very effectively, the people that progress the best are the ones who take the advice from where it best comes from, not just because it comes from a person who's older than you, more mature than you. Because yeah, that is definitely an ego thing. Cause it's like, oh, well, yeah, I can take advice from him or her, cause she'd got 20 years experience on me. It's not about experience. It's in terms of length of experience and age of experience. It's about what is the value that they can bring to you. And that can come from anywhere. I mean, to be honest, I learn from my children all the time. They say things to me and I think, oh, that's a great idea. And they challenge me, which actually crumbles you, because you're thinking, oh, well, she's 14. And she's telling me that what I've said is, actually, Daddy, I'm not sure that's right. And you think, what do you mean it's not right? And she'll explain. And I think, you're right, actually, it's not. I'm going to change on the basis of what you've said. So those are the key things that you think for good leadership. The converts, and I think you mentioned it, what did you call it? You called it your leadership pitfalls, I think, at the beginning. Yeah. So get hit me with some of those leadership pitfalls that people should be avoiding.
Oh, wow. So I haven't published anything yet, but I've written 50 leadership pitfalls. And these are all based off of real life experiences that I've encountered. Either it's happened to me or I've done it, or now I've even got a handful in here where I've been coaching and people say, hey, you're not going to believe what happened. And I talked on about a couple of them. So one of them is, you know, caring more about your product than you do your people. Yeah. For me, it's, you got to put the people first. Another one that's big on there is listening to hear and not to understand. You gotta listen to understand what they're saying. And if you're only hearing, then that's us responding or reacting to what they're telling us, which goes back to that critical thinking stuff. Another one I touched on too is prioritizing your needs and goals above everything else. So at the end of the day, you and I are nothing more than cosmic dust floating around this galaxy. What makes my cosmic dust more important than somebody else's? Absolutely nothing. So if you go back to show them that you care, then they're going to start helping with you. And I mean, I got a ton of these. We could go on and on for quite a while. But I think what the difference is, what managers do is just checking the boxes. It's measuring everything. And it's not about people. And that leadership side is about people. If you have troubles measuring it, it's probably a leadership skill. If you can measure it, quantify it, qualify it, it's probably a management skill. And I think in today's world, all these universities are putting out experts, right? They're putting out accountants, they're putting out engineers, they're putting out, you know, black belts in Six Sigma. Where's the leadership? Where is the human element in this thing? Because that's what really needs us. And so I studied in sociology as my undergrad, and then my grad school work is behavioral science for leadership. So it's all about people. We're tribal by nature. Human beings are tribal. Now, if I would have said to you, we're community by nature, everybody goes, ah, yeah, we're all community. But think of a tribe. How do they survive? They all know their role. They all know how to help each other, and they're all doing it for the good of the tribe. And that's how they survive. And that's how they think. And that's what I try to instill in these teams I coach. Look, you're a tribe. You've all got to work together. You all got to understand your role, because then you survive. Divided you fall, tribes, you're going to survive. And that's what and by telling people that it's tribal, uses a different word, and it gets them thinking differently. Because everybody thinks community, they think, you know, we've used the term community so loosely in our language, and you know, a town is a community. No, it really isn't, but we've kind of used it. Same way we've mixed up manager and leader. So many people say manager and leader are the same. No, they're not. And I used to be that guy that used to say, oh yeah, if you're management, you're a leader. And people would say, oh, you got great leadership skills. I didn't know what skills I had that made me a leader. I had to go out and learn and go, oh snap, that is a leadership skill. Okay. And here's the other thing too, that I want to share with people. I was always a nice guy. I've always been a nice guy. I've been polite. I've been well-mannered. Doesn't mean I wasn't a jerk. Okay. So you can be a jerk and be a nice guy. That does not make you be a leader. So I had to learn how to, because people would say, Rich, that's just flat out mean. You're a jerk. I'm like, all I'm doing is trying to get the process done. I'm just trying to make more products. I'm trying to get more money, but I didn't care about them. So you start caring about people. And that's how I removed my self-proclaimed jerk title. And you go talk to people since I went through my master's program, like, Rich, you're a completely different person. It's like, yeah, I finally get what makes this world tick and how we're going to survive going into the future. Because the pandemic with this, I don't know, you can call it whatever you want, the great reshuffle or the great resignation. People are changing. Why are they changing? People don't quit jobs. People quit bosses.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that I always say to people that if you want to go into a leadership position and you don't enjoy working with people and you don't enjoy developing people and you don't enjoy, as you said, collaborating and delivering through people, go and do something else. Because, you know, I've seen so many people who, oh, I want to be a leader or a manager because, you know, I get more money. I can, you know, it's kudos. I've got a badge and I've got a better title. You think, yeah, that's not the reason to do it. If you love working with people and delivering through people, you'll do well. And that's why I always said, focus on how you're going to do things and those things will get done. If you're just focusing on what you want to do, and then you're just using people, because effectively you are using people in that circumstance to get what you want. People can see through it and they can see, oh, he's just passing through, isn't he? He's doing what he always does. He's gonna scorch earth policy, then he's gonna move on to somewhere else, then scorch earth, then before to something else. So I mean, we're coming to the end, Todd. I need to get a couple of extra questions. You said in your book that leadership is an incredible challenge. So why do you think it's such a challenge? Because, you know, as we talk here, it seems like common sense. And as I often say, common sense actually, unfortunately, isn't that common. But it is a challenge. Why is it such a challenge? Because it just seems to me like, well, it's obvious what you should be doing if you really want to enjoy what you're doing and deliver those great results, but people don't do it.
I think you just touched on it right there with what you said before and all the things you have to do. And a lot of people think that leadership or manager title is about the more money. And I think they get the wrong things. And it's difficult because you're responsible for that life, for that livelihood of that person that's under you. You've been empowered to take care of them, whether it was through authority or because you've become a leader. Now it's your responsibility. It's like raising a family, right? You don't raise your kids to be good kids. You raise your children to be great adults in society. We need to look at leadership as the same thing. We aren't raising employees to be good employees. You're not going to get anything out of them. They're going to quit. You got to treat employees how they can become the best leaders in the organization. Now, here's the thing. Everybody's going to say, Rich, not everybody can be a leader. Aha. But every day you are leading somebody as an individual. You can even lead yourself. You can lead your family. You can lead your friends. You can lead your church group. You can lead your sports team. You're leading something. So that's why I think it's so challenging, because you're accepting responsibility for other people's lives.
Well, thank you very much for that. And one of the big things that came out of that in terms of leadership is constantly try to learn, constantly try to push forward. And obviously, I don't think anyone would jump straight to the end, but if you did, the thing that Rich mentioned was, you know, the key thing or building trust, they are, you know, having empathy for people and putting ego aside, and also having authenticity. And that learning piece is, in my opinion, is part of that being humble and always wanting to move forward. So apart from obviously your great services, Rich, which I'll drop some links where you get your podcast from so that you can get hold of Rich if you like what he said, because I know you will. And obviously reading the book that sits behind you, You're Doing It Wrong. You know, where else should they go to learn more about leadership?
It's as easy as going to the web, just Google in leadership development, and it will pull up all kinds of information. And you're going to find more information, you know, what to poke a stick at, or wander down your favorite bookstore, find a book, go online, go to your podcast, wherever you find this podcast, look in there, type in leadership as a keyword in the podcast and find somebody else that's talking about them. And my challenge to you as listeners out there is just learn and listen to as much as you possibly can. Yes, some of it's going to be for you, some of it's not, but you got to take what you hear, what you like, what you appreciate, build it into your skill set, and then go out and try it. And guess what? You're going to make mistakes, but that's all part of life. Yeah. Nobody's going to know.
Lastly, very, very, very lastly, if there's one thing, so no one's listened to anything else and they just turn on and say, right, Rich, give me one thing, one soundbite, not soundbite so much, because soundbites are normally very tried, but what one thing that you want people to take away from this one message?
People come first. Not about processes, not about products, not about profits.
And I hear people say that all the time, but they don't live it. You know, it's always people come first if they're sacking someone, people come first if they're abusing somebody. Well, it's all about the people. Well, which links back to your actions. So people come first, I think, is the phrase that sums up what we've talked about over the last hour. It's been an absolute pleasure. I can't believe how quickly it's gone, actually. I've got about 5 million other questions to ask, and I think, oh, an hour's gone. So thank you very much, Rich. Really appreciate it. And for you, those listeners, you know, as I say all the time, we're going to put all the links in there. You'll be able to get hold of Rich. You'll go and get the book, definitely, because I think that's a perfect place to start. And, you know, and obviously Rich has a podcast as well, which I think you should definitely start listening to. And I'll put all the links in my podcast when I release this. So thank you very much, Rich.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's been a joy today.
Thank you very much.
So there you have it, listeners, another illuminating episode of the Hands-On Business Podcast. But obviously, I would say that, wouldn't I? However, I think you'll agree that Rich was an engaging guest, and he clearly articulated the reason why being a leader is much, much more important than being a manager. Simply put, stop managing things and tasks and start collaborating with people. And as happened to Rich, if you do that, your performance will catapult and you'll start producing much better results. The thing that sticks in my mind is that a key thread that Rich kept talking about, was trust and being authentic. Walking the walk, not just talking the talk. As Rich said, leadership is not about being in a position of power. Leadership is about bringing the most out of people and helping them achieve their goals. Because if you help them do that, they'll help you achieve yours. Remember to practice the skills on a daily basis and keep learning. That's one of the key things that Rich was saying in terms of growing as a leader and moving from management to leadership. Now, to help you on that learning journey, you can find Rich and all his resources using the links in the podcast description. And definitely get hold of his book, You're Doing It Wrong, Stop Managing and Start Leading. That's a brilliant place to start. Now, as I always say, check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com, because I know you all learn in different ways, and you might be, you know, out jogging or running, or, you know, on a bike while you listen to the podcast and you can't take notes. Well, don't worry, go to the show notes and that'll help you remember exactly what was talked about in there and give you all the links that you require. And if you do like what you heard, which I'm hoping you did, give us a positive review. And if you didn't, then keep it to yourself. As I always end, keep listening and keep growing.